This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Right, welcome along. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly, the only place where your minds need to be ready for moulding. Yeah, my name's Dan. Thanks for giving us a listen. This week, we learn exactly why the food that you put into your body is so important to how you live, and also how you can raise some cash for really important causes just by thinking more about that and maybe giving up some of your favourite foods for the next few months. Also, we'll learn about one of the most mean insects in the jungle and why it acts like a bus for a buttload of diseases. And I've got a happy story about the world's loneliest frog to tell you before we go. I'll do some shout-outs as well in just a sec, so if you've sent us a message, stay there. I might say hello after we catch up with one of the smartest geniuses in the Fun Kids office. This is Professor Hallux.
Professor Hallux's kaleidoscopic antibiotic. I think I need a replacement body. Mine's rubbish.
Oh, come on, that's not true. Your body is doing a great job of protecting you from infections.
Doesn't feel like it. Go on, do us a favour and take a look inside me, would you, Nanobot?
Oh, all right. I'll charge up the heli-telly bubble and get down to the size of an atom to investigate. Back in a jiffy.
Heli-telly bubble, ready for launch in 3, 2, 1.
Gosh. It's getting hot as we approach the professor's skin. He's got quite a fever.
Welcome to the immune system in action. Microbes like being at the body's normal temperature, 37 degrees Celsius. They don't like it when the body raises the temperature to help fight off infections. That's what happens when you have a fever.
Even at this size, it's very difficult to get inside a human body. Skin is designed to be a tough, waterproof barrier that keeps foreign things out. That's why, if you have a cut or a graze, it's a good idea to wash and cover up so that infections can't sneak in. Let's try somewhere different. Setting coordinates for the ear.
Oh, it tickles. Careful as you go. Don't bonk me on the stirrup.
Even where there are holes, like your ears and nose, you'll find substances like mucus, earwax and hairs, all designed to trap particles and viruses. And the professor certainly has got hairy ears. Hold on.
In 4 micrometres, bear right on the eustachian tube and merge with the throat.
Travelling down the professor's lungs now. Left a bit. Ooh! He's got a chest infection by the look of it. I can see Streptococcus pneumoniae bacteria. There's certainly a lot of them around, gathering in pairs. No wonder he's feeling so grotty.
White blood cells have been detected. The body's immune system has been activated.
As you may know, there's more to blood than just, well, blood. As well as red blood cells that carry oxygen to all parts of the body, platelets and other substances suspended in a fluid called plasma, blood also contains white blood cells that help the body fight infections. Look, here comes a lymphocyte. That's a type of white blood cell coming to the rescue.
Some lymphocytes produce special proteins called antibodies, which attach to the surface of the harmful microbe, like a key in a lock, helping to destroy them. Different lymphocytes have different keys, so sometimes it takes a while for the human body to find the right match. But when it is found, the microbes are in trouble. Sometimes antibodies will cause the harmful microbes to burst open to prevent them from reproducing.
What's going on in there, Nanobot?
If I'm right, this lymphocyte is using its antibodies to alert the phagocytes. They're a different type of white blood cell. Yup, here they come. They're chasing the bacteria and are eating it. Incredible! Although I don't want them to think I'm a harmful bacteria. Time to go. I think we're being followed.
The clever thing about the immune system is that once white blood cells have successfully defeated the bacteria, other cells, called memory cells, remain in their body. This way, if the same microbe appears again, the body has its defences ready.
I do believe I'm feeling a little better, Nanobot. Thanks for giving me a checkup.
Don't thank me. Thank those hard-working white blood cells and all your other body's defences.
Professor Hallex's Kaleidoscopic Antibiotic, with support from eBug and Public Health England. Find out more at funkidslive.com/hallux or visit e-bug.eu.
Remember, if you've got a science question rattling around your brain that you really need an answer to, let me know first and I will find an expert for you. The best way to tell me is by leaving it as a review over on Apple Podcasts. It's really simple on there. You can leave your name so I know who you are and I can say hello. Also, you can drop us 5 stars and there's a little comment box and that's where you write your question. And that's what Darcy Sophia Morgan's done. She's asked, what is the smallest mammal in the world? Well, Darcy, thanks for getting in touch. There's actually two of them. They have the joint title for the smallest mammal in the world. There's the Etruscan shrew, which is 4 centimetres long, and that includes its tail. And you can find the Etruscan across Europe and North Africa. It's in some parts of Malaysia as well. And they like to hide from the predators in shrubs because they're so tiny. But they do have a venomous saliva that they can use if really needed. But they've got such tiny mouths that I don't think it ever works too well. And it shares the title of the world's smallest mammal with the bumblebee bat, which is a proper bat, but it gets its nickname because it's no bigger, really, than a bumblebee. It's barely over an inch long. And now they tend to live in groups of 100 or more in the limestone caves of Thailand. So there you go, Darcy. That's that question sorted. Thanks so much for getting in touch. Also, hello to Isabella in California, to Nell from Crewe, and also massive shout-out to Frankie Alexander, who sent in a brilliant question all about why fish can survive in water, but humans have to come up to breathe. And Frankie, I'm searching for an expert for you as we speak. Just bear with me. Leave it a few weeks, please, pal. Yeah, if you've got a question that you want answered by a proper expert, let me know. Leave it as a review over on Apple Podcasts. Now, this February, the British Heart Foundation, they want you to de-chox. That's to give up chocolate. Because they found that chocolate is actually a lot worse for your heart than I think many people would, probably you, even realised. Now, Victoria Taylor is a senior dietitian and she's on the phone to tell us more. Hey, Victoria.
Hello.
What's your favourite chocolate?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. Well, I have two. I probably sometimes enjoy a bit of milk chocolate, but I also enjoy a very dark chocolate as well, so with a really high cocoa content.
Now, Victoria, are you, and I make no judgment here, but as a senior dietitian, are you the type of person that can easily go into the fridge, find a bar of chocolate, have a couple of squares, then put it back for later?
Well, that is the kind of what we do recommend. But, you know, as a dietitian, we're all human. So, you know, there are always foods that, you know, you really like eating. And chocolate's one of the ones that I think in the UK we love eating. But it's about getting it in the right proportions, isn't it? And that's about learning to eat healthily. And rather than thinking about the things that you can't have or you should be limiting, it's actually about focusing more on the things that you should be having.
So tell us more then, why the British Heart Foundation, why do they want us to try and give up chocolate to detox for the whole of February?
Well, detox is really, it's a fundraising campaign, so it's not so much of a health campaign, because if you give up chocolate for 1 month, that's not really going to make any long-term impact on your health. But we recognise that it is a challenge for people because this is one of the foods that they really like. And it's worked really well for the last few years. People love, you know, the challenge of giving up chocolate, raising funds for the British Heart Foundation to help us do more research into heart disease and heart and circulatory disease. But it's also a really fun thing for the whole family to get involved in. You know, so you can challenge your, you know, your parents or your aunts, uncles, brothers and sisters to join in as well, and see how difficult it is for each different person in the family.
So why is chocolate, I guess, so bad for us? Like, eating in quite a lot of quite a high quantity, as you say, you know, scoffing the whole bar, not putting some back for later. Why is it bad particularly for our heart? What's going on?
I think the thing with chocolate is that it's and with all of the kind of foods that are high in saturated fat, salt and sugar, is it's the amount that you're eating. So it's not that you must never eat any, but it's too much of those foods, too much saturated fat and too much salt are linked to risk factors for heart and circulatory disease as we get older that can really kind of be a problem for our health long term. So as when you're a child, it's about learning to eat healthily and sort of, you know, eating the right things to help you grow and have energy to do all of the things that you need to do. But it is also about getting into good habits so that when you are an adult, you can really help to protect yourself from these health conditions that affect you later on in life.
And what's going on in the body? So, you know, smart people always say words like saturated fats. And,
yeah.
And sometimes I think it gets confusing how, I don't know, like a dairy milk bar that we stick in our mouths, why that makes the kind of the fat around our veins a bit, you know, makes it more constricted. I think there's a disconnect there. Can you help us try and figure that out?
Sure. So something like chocolate is high in a type of fat called saturated fat. And there are different kinds of fats and they do different things in the body. Saturated fat, which is generally the type of fat that's solid at room temperature, so things like butter, lard, ghee, the fat around meat, and the kind of fat that they use in chocolate. The problem with having too much of it is that it can lead to an increase in a fatty substance in the body called cholesterol. And the problem with cholesterol is if we have too much, it can lead to fatty deposits in your arteries. This is over a long period of time. And those fatty deposits can become unstable and lead to kind of clots. And that's where it links to problems like having a heart attack or a stroke later on.
What seems confusing to me, Victoria, is as humans, we're kind of at the moment the peak of evolution. You know, we're top of the tree. And it baffles me that we continue to eat something that we know does us so much damage in the long term. That goes completely against the idea of survival of the fittest. So why do we carry on eating chocolate? What is it about those bars? What is it that's in there that we love so much?
The thing with our eating habits is that they are so complex. So we don't only eat things based on our knowledge. We eat things because they look nice, they smell nice, because they're there, because other people are eating them. There are lots of different things that influence what and how much we eat. And the way that our society has sort of evolved as well is that there are so many opportunities to eat generally, and often the foods that are available to eat are these foods that are high in fat, high in salt, high in sugar. And we find those foods very, very tasty. And so we want to eat more of them. And what happens is that we eat more than we should do. And that can lead to problems with, you know, heart and circulatory disease. We can gain weight. It can affect our cholesterol levels, as I talked about, and also our blood pressure.
So we're slap bang in the middle of January right now, and I know that a lot of people have completely given up meat and dairy. They're doing this veganuary thing, and it brings to mind, how much thought do we need to give to the food that we are putting into our body, the fuel that we're eating? Like, should we possibly cut out meat? Should we? What's going on? How much more thought do we need to give, Victoria?
So I think at the moment there are guidelines from the government about the proportions that we should have all of the different food groups in for the best health effect. And you can find that, it's called the Eat Well Guide. You can find that online, just if you just look on a search engine, you can find it really easily. And you can follow the Eat Well Guide and have the right balance of food groups, whether you eat meat, whether you are vegetarian, whether you are vegan. So those sorts of issues, it's really a personal choice whether you want to eat meat and animal products or not. But regardless of that, it's really important to eat healthily and to do it over the long term. So build up those healthy eating habits to really help to protect your health over time. So the thing with healthy eating is that it isn't something that you can switch on one day. and then be healthy. It's really something that grows over time. So it's about building up habits and really learning how to enjoy healthy eating rather than feeling like you have to eat healthily.
Does it really matter what we put into our body if we do enough exercise? If we think of ourselves like a car and you put the fuel into the car, if you go on a long journey, you're going to run out of fuel eventually. Is it kind of the same with our body and exercise?
I think a lot of people do think if they are very active, then they don't need to worry about what they eat. And that's not true at all. The diet and exercise really do go hand in hand. And being physically active is also really important to protect yourself from heart and circulatory diseases. So, yes, you have to eat healthily as well as being active. And also eating healthily, if you are very active, it will help you to be active. So it will help to give you the energy that you need. It will help your body to recover from exercise after you've done that, if you do something really kind of vigorous. And so it's important to have that real balance of nutrients in your diet.
Brilliant. Victoria Taylor, thank you so much for coming on. And if you're listening to this, if you want to make yourself healthy and raise some cash for charity, head to bhf.org.uk/detox. Victoria, thanks so much.
Thanks.
This week's Dangerous Dan is one of the cruelest insects in the jungle. You see, it loves hurting creatures so much that it carries round a huge arsenal of diseases to get the job done. The tsetse fly lives across Africa, and they look much like a normal fly, except they've got bigger heads and folded wings, but they are the deadliest biting insect in Africa. They're vectors, which means that diseases, bugs and other parasites, they use the fly as transport. They all kind of hop on board like a big flying bus. Now what happens is the tsetse, it'll bite a creature to eat, to suck the blood, and while they're eating, they'll poison their prey with the disease that they are carrying. Kind of unwittingly though, this kills camels and horses and pigs and warthogs and antelopes and giraffes and buffalo. Years ago, the tsetse carried the disease of rinderpest, which killed 90% of the cows across Africa. Now, humans don't escape their vicious bites either. The tsetse fly, it carries sleeping sickness, which causes headaches and fevers and joint pains and organ failures and then death. All this death and destruction is caused by a tiny little fly that really has got no clue of the damage that it's doing. It's just the bus that all the other diseases are riding on. So we'll find out if the world's loneliest frog has finally found a mate in just a sec. First, let's look to the sky with our weather and climate genius. This is Marina Ventura.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers.
Hi there, Marina Ventura here. I love finding out about the natural world, and that includes the Earth's climate. We know that weather can change from one day to the next, but climates can change too over the time span of years, centuries, or even longer. So I'm on a mission to fill MapApp with the latest climate information with the help of some awesome climate explorers. Come on then, let's go. A bit of rain is something we're used to in this country. Sometimes it's fun to get your wellies on and jump in some puddles.
Rain is important for life, providing water to drink and keep clean, and helping crops and plants to grow. People also like to live near water. It's relaxing and a great source of fun. But too much rainwater can cause very serious problems, causing rivers to overflow and flood the surrounding areas, filling houses, schools and shops with water.
You can imagine how scary that might be and how much damage would be done if that happened in your neighbourhood. You might even have to leave your home to stay somewhere else. Climate explorers are very interested in studying rainfall and flooding to help us prepare for when these things happen and to help prevent them causing damage.
That's right, Marina. It's something that's becoming more important. Rising global temperatures may cause heavier rainfall events as well as sea levels to rise. So flooding is something that's not going to go away.
Time to meet our next climate explorer.
Hi, I'm Kate and I'm a flood scientist. Floods kill more people than anything else on the planet and are something which can affect us here in the UK. We can't just hope they don't happen. We have to accept that they are a part of life and do our best to reduce the impact they have.
Storm Desmond saw the highest ever amount of rainfall recorded in the UK in one day.
Flooding isn't just becoming more frequent, but the levels of floodwater are becoming higher too. In 2015, flooding in Cumbria broke some of our strongest flood defences. My job is to try to work out what will happen to rivers when there is a lot of rainfall. If we know where the river will overflow, then we can take measures to prevent damage to homes.
Great to know there is something we can do. But how can you tell where the overflows will be?
We can make computer models of rivers and chuck a load of virtual water into them. We keep going until the water starts to jump out. When there is a real flood, we collect real data to see if our models were correct, whether the areas with the most flooding match what our computer model predicted.
Sounds like you get rather wet.
Well, luckily we have a drone, a small flying robot that uses sensors like infrared and thermal imaging to take measurements. Ours is called Firefly. It flies above the areas affected to collect the data.
Wow, I'd love to be a drone.
We'll have to get you some wings. Thanks, Kate. Even though we can't easily prevent natural disasters like flooding, it's good to know that climate explorers are working hard to help us limit the damage they can do.
It certainly is. The more we know, the better we can prepare.
And now we know more about flooding too, don't we? Ready for upload, Mappy?
Load me up.
Next time, we'll be looking at how animals can help us understand changes to the climate. See you soon.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers, supported by the Natural Environment Research Council, the science of the natural world. Find out more at funkidslive.com/marina.
Right, let's talk about the science that has been in your news this week. CERN, the Science Research Centre in Switzerland, it's making an even bigger Large Hadron Collider. For the meantime, they've named this particle accelerator the Future Circular Collider. It's due to be 4 times longer than the original LHC, 10 times more powerful, and its job is simple. It smashes particles together really, really, really fast to try and search for new subatomic particles before 2050. Also, Russia's only space radio telescope has broken down. Chiefs say that their Spectre-R satellite communication system has stopped working, which means they've got no way of seeing what's happening in space that we know of. And finally, honestly, listen up, this is a great story. The world's loneliest frog finally has a date. Romeo, the only Sehuencas water frog that scientists knew about, has spent 10 years alone in an aquarium in Bolivia. But researchers, they've found 5 more in a stream in the jungle, and they're trying to breed more of them to finally find Romeo his Juliet. Right, that is it for this week on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. Remember, all our amazing science series, some that you've heard today, but we've got tons more. Ones where you can travel back in time, you can learn what goes on inside your body and everything. They are free for you to download through Apple Podcasts, places where you normally get your shows from, you know, on Spotify, things like that. They're also on the free Fun Kids app, and you can find us at funkidslive.com. And Fun Kids, we're a children's radio station from the UK. You can hear us all over the country on your DAB digital radio, on that free Fun Kids app, and at funkidslive.com. I'll see you next week. Bye!
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK, or online at funkidslive.com.